Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mulletcast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer. Today we're joined by Rich Genovalo-Veo. Rich is a musician, singer, songwriter, empowerer, that's the part I like, yeah. And entertainer. Follow him, check out his website, Rich Aveo, A-V-E-O, richaveo.com, on Instagram, at Rich Aveo, and check out his new show, impressionableshow.com. Impressionable Show, is this the debut performance on the 26th?
It is, it's the debut.
Nice. So October 26th, 8 p.m., Investors Bank Theater, Sukasana, New Jersey, 8 p.m., and tickets are on the website.
Yes, sir.
So we'll dig into that a little bit more, but that sounds like a pretty killer launch.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So excited for it.
It's really cool.
Yeah, we workshopped it for a while, and now it's the full regalia.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
All right, so let's figure out how you got there. Reading your bio reminded me, it's funny, you said you were obsessed with, like, flying as a kid.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot, dude, how many times did you tie a towel around you as a cape?
Literally, like, every day.
It made me think about that. I was like, holy shit, you know, I used to do the same thing.
It's funny.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just an obsession. Right. You know, I don't even really know what it was.
Right.
It was the feeling, or just like jumping off the couch. It was just like the coolest thing in the world, you know?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So was it from, like, seeing Superman or something? Or
probably.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably where it started.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Were you into other, like, comics and stuff?
I really was.
Yeah.
I used to collect quite a bit as a kid.
Right.
And then, unfortunately, after I went to a prep school for high school.
Right.
So I kind of, like, left the nest for a little while, and then I found out my mom got rid of all my comics when I came home for summer, you know, for like Christmas break or something.
Yeah.
It crushed me.
That's the worst.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, I am obsessed with Marvel and DC.
That's cool. You know. And then you got into music at an early age. You said since like seven. How did you get started in music, and what was your connection like?
So my father was a singer, professional singer, and he kind of quit. I'll call it quit, or we can say retired, I guess. Mm-hmm. When I was quite young, because he really couldn't figure out a way to really make it work for us, you know, support the family. And I remember him kind of saying, music is a thing that it's all in. If you know, it's all or nothing. So if he just couldn't live with the notion of doing it part time,
right?
So he just decided to just walk away from it.
Wow.
But I always have these memories of, like, watching him perform. They would, like, sneak me into the bars that he'd play. You know, we'd go see him and then scoot out. But, like, it was so cool. That and in the first grade, my teacher, Mrs. Jackson, which she had this, like, sort of attitude upright piano in the room. And fortunately for me, my seat was right next to the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whenever we would, like, she'd go back there and, like, play songs and we'd sing along and everything. And I always had, like, a little bird's eye view of the keys.
Oh, cool.
And it was just fascinating. If I remember correctly, I think, like, the back of it was kind of exposed, or maybe she had the front up or something, but I could always see the hammers, and I had no idea how that worked, but I just remember it looking really cool, you know. And I'm like, I always wanted to, like, just touch it, but I never did, you know. I just wanted to, like, hit one key, so I've always had this obsession with it,
right?
You know,
what kind of music was your dad playing?
So my dad is Latino, mm-hmm. So he was doing, like, sort of traditional Latino music, like a little bit of, like, Latin jazz, and he's from Puerto Rico, so he's doing some of that traditional stuff from down there. So he had a band, he was a band leader,
and cool.
It was really cool. And I never spoke Spanish as a kid, so I had literally no idea what he was saying,
right,
like, ever, but I thought the music was really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
And what did he do when he, like, left music?
He was an electrician for just a county college, Essex County College. And oddly enough, I mean, I'd say he walked away from performing, but he was always involved with the entertainment, like stuff that went down at the college.
Oh, cool.
You know, so he always had like a little bit of a hand in that, and right. he would perform at some of the events there, and then that's sort of how my performance career launched.
He would
somehow finagle me into like performing at these college events and stuff.
Oh, cool.
So I'd play, you know, just classical piano as a kid there. And
right.
I was always like a corporate player as a kid.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was interesting.
All right. So you were intrigued by the piano. Then was that the first instrument you played?
Yeah.
You learned? Yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't really find my voice. I was always really shy to sing in mm-hmm. front of people because my dad was, I don't want to say he was judgmental, but he was very, he was a perfectionist.
Right.
You know, even, I saw how he behaved toward my piano mm-hmm. and he would watch me practice every day. I'd practice for minimum 3.5 hours every day.
Wow.
And he would just stand there, you know, sit in the room with me and make sure that I practiced that long and that it was quality practice. And mm-hmm. so I was like, wow, he's really like heavy handed with this stuff. And he's a good singer. Like, I can do this better than him.
Wow.
I don't know if I can sing better than him. So I didn't want to have to deal with the pressure
right.
of singing in front of him. So I kind of like, I was shy with my voice until probably maybe 13, 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to sing out a little more and, you know, realized that I really love, I kind of like that. I liked that better than right. than playing classical piano.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what kind of feedback did you get from your dad when you started singing?
He was in shock.
Yeah.
You know, he was absolutely, he couldn't believe it, you know. I knew I needed work. You know, I think he knew it too. But I think just the fact that I was doing it in front of him, he was just mesmerized. And I was like, all right, good. I'm going to start doing this now. Like, I can officially do this. Like,
right.
I, like, you know, broke the wall.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So then your like start in music maybe in a way was like the opposite of your father, like where he was
maybe,
like
yeah.
all in and then stepped out. You were sort of like all into like academics
yeah.
and career a little bit, but music was on the side.
It was the piano was mm-hmm. always kind of like paramount.
Right.
I have to say from even when I started piano, I always wanted more than just to be like the classical player who like flips his tuxedo tails out and sits down, you know.
Right.
Although I will say this, one of the reasons I even got into the piano and that image of the tails was like the iconic Bugs Bunny episode.
Yeah, right.
You know, my grandmother, and I don't know if you remember, do you remember Victor Borga?
Yeah.
So the comical piano player, like my grandmother introduced me to him. She was a huge Liberace fan and all, you know, so like.
So funny, man. That's my grandmother too.
Right. And like, I used to just watch Liberace with right. her and like, you know, I thought he was cool. And,
yeah.
And, but Victor Borga, I'm like, so you can actually make people laugh with music. Oh, this is interesting.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting because my life was just so serious. Like, it was just serious music. You
right.
know, Beethoven, Mozart. And it's like, you're not supposed to smile. You're not supposed to be entertaining. Just sit there and play every note the right way and make people clap at the end of it.
Right.
You know?
It's crazy, right? Because you think about it, there's so much passion and emotion in those pieces.
Right.
But so why are you so like stoic? And
it's crazy.
It's weird. How did that evolve?
Yeah, I don't know. I probably some kind of aristocratic
right.
thing, you know, where you're not, you know,
right.
you're kind of supposed to be
like, don't make eye contact with the.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, this is interesting story, by the way. Now we just aristocrats popped up. I heard someone say recently that musicians were always in the servant class.
Mm.
Like even like popular ones back from that time,
because right.
we were joking around how like musicians always have to come in through the kitchen.
Mm.
Like no matter, right. you know, you always have to come in through the back, you know, like
right.
don't let anyone see you. Like
that's right.
You're the man tonight. We're going to clap for you, but I don't want to see you
right.
before that. Cause it ruins everything.
That's right.
You know? And I heard like that started because, you know, like the musician meal,
right.
like, oh, you get a vendor meal. Here you go.
Yeah,
here you go.
Yeah.
Beethoven. Here's your right. turkey club. You know?
That is crazy.
So funny.
Yeah. You're right. It's probably much later where it sort of evolved, you know?
Yeah.
Where there was like almost celebrity attached or something.
I always
later.
Wonder when yeah. that started.
Right.
It's like such a fascinating thing for me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It is wild.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So were you playing any of your own stuff or are you just fully immersed in like classical at this period?
I was solely classical from probably, you know, when I first started up until I'd say probably 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, I have these two lifelong friends that I've known since I was about five. The two brothers that moved from Spain. They moved right next door to my grandmother's house, which is like where I spent all my time. And we had grown to be best friends. We were inseparable. And oddly enough, these two guys can sing really well. And their mom is a, you know, was a professional singer as well. And so we clicked on that. And so we always kind of like secretly wrote music and taught ourselves.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
To harmonize because we were like huge Boys to Men fans,
right? Which
is like,
you're not alone. There were many at the time. So
yeah. I mean, I'm proud of it, you know.
Right.
But yeah, you know, we were these like kind of three kids. It was interesting. We were like those kind of stereotypical like guys around the garbage can, you know, like
right,
harmonizing a cappella stuff. Like we would do that, you know, in on our street, and but we just kept it to ourselves. So I always wrote and composed and, you know, kind of secretly behind the scenes, like sang the devil's music, you know, like while I would go home and practice my classical stuff.
That's really fun.
You know, yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
So then when you went to college, was music part of what you were studying, or were you just?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. High school, I don't want to say I took a hiatus from music, but as I mentioned, it was a prep school in Connecticut.
Right.
So I actually moved out of home. I lived in a dorm. Mm-hmm. I lived on campus. And that was like strictly academic.
Right.
And I was involved musically there, sort of. I was in like chamber ensemble and things like that, which I just did not like. You know, it was like, all right, here we go. You know,
right.
The only cool part about that was I got to play a real harpsichord once, not the...
No, that's
I was
cool.
Like, all right, I kind of feel like Bach right now.
Right.
But junior year, my friends were like, hey, you know, the a cappella group is auditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You should try out. And I'm like, I didn't even know anyone knew I liked to sing, you know, because I still didn't even really do it much in front of people.
Right.
And I'd say that was a really pivotal moment for me. I auditioned for the a cappella group and I got in. And then people were making like a really big deal about my voice, and I was insecure about it. They were just like, they wanted me to do all the solos and stuff, and I'm like, whoa, all right, it's kind of cool. And then I finally got like the first feeling of, I don't want to say, you know, stardom, but I got such a reaction out of people that I never anticipated getting a reaction from by singing.
Right.
And I was like, okay. Game over. You know, this is the feeling that I've always searched for, that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I was really able to do that with my voice, as I always kind of dreamed I could.
Right.
I think that's when it happened for me. Must have been about 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's intense. So it's interesting. We should give you a shout out because you're obviously very, I don't know what the right word is. Motivated, I guess, because you got a scholarship to high school and college and like went out and made that happen.
Yeah.
Like that's really cool. But you left college before you finished.
I did.
So what happened there?
I just kind of realized, well, first of all, I didn't really enjoy the scene very much. I love New York. I love to visit New York.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really much of a city boy, even though I was raised in the city.
Right.
Never really took my spirit in, you know. And so I went to NYU.
Right.
And I was just kind of like, I feel like I'm just wearing a costume every day. I just feel like I'm not supposed to really be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of went through the motions because I just thought that's what you were supposed to do. You know, this is the path you're supposed to follow if you want to have a decent life.
Right.
And I was never really educated on the notion that artists and musicians, you know, it is a viable career. You know, I think we're conditioned to see the 1% and then everything underneath that's just this abyss.
Right.
You know, and everyone under that is just
they're not an
struggling
artist
or yeah, you know. And so I started to kind of preach and condition myself to believe that, hearkening back to my dad, even where he couldn't figure out a way to make his art and his performances and his music a viable career. And I was like, damn it, I have to figure this out. And I just don't think college is going to help me figure that out.
Right.
You know, this is kind of like this pre-carved path that I'm supposed to kind of be on. And if I follow all the right steps, then I'll get a job and just kind of live that life. And it just wasn't for me.
Right.
It wasn't for me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what made you leave?
So I think the final straw for me was junior year during finals. We had an offer, me and actually the two guys that I mentioned that I grew up with. By this time, we had officially had a thing, and we were working on, like, you know, shopping to labels and things like this. And we had a lot of interest at that point. And we had been offered an opportunity to go to Spain.
Wow.
To do like a tour and record and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had spoken to one of my professors about it. And I said, listen, I just, the way it was like, there was a big show on Univision, or it might've been Telemundo. I forget. It was one of the two big Latin stations.
Right.
She was like the Oprah of that time, you know, in like the 90s and early 2000s. And the show was called Christina.
Mm-hmm.
She had millions and millions of views. So my friend's mom shipped our demo out to the show, and they called us and were like, you want to come to Miami and perform on the show? So we were like, of course. Yeah, so we go down, we do the show, it goes really well. And then because of some of that stuff, we developed a connection with a long-term friend of my friend's mom from Spain, who ran this big studio out there.
Right.
And he was like, why don't you come out? I want to record you guys.
Right.
And so we were kind of offered our first record deal.
That's
You know, it wasn't like a label or anything.
Right.
But it was like our first deal.
That's
cool. And we were so excited. And I was going to miss my finals if I took this out. It took the opportunity.
Right.
And the professor was like, well, you know, I'm gonna hit you with this adult real talk now. Like,
right.
You have a choice to make, kind of thing. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
You're right. I do. I make my choice. I'm out of here.
Right.
And so that really kind of helped me take that first step in just saying, you know, I have to do this on my terms, you know?
Right.
So it made it really easy for me.
That's cool. I mean, that's a bold choice, you know, because I could see the weight of, I'm at NYU on scholarship. Like, how do I walk away from this? But, you know.
It was terrifying.
Tons of successful people have done the same thing. Right?
And I'm like, you know, I think for me the biggest fear was I'm going to disappoint my family.
Yeah.
You know, they were so proud when I got into the school. And,
right.
You know,
were they disappointed?
I don't know if they were so much disappointed as they were just really scared that I was just going to be a couch surfer for the rest of my life.
I can hear my parents in the back of my head right now. What are you, nuts?
Like? Oh, my God, you know. But they were so supportive of the music. And basically, I said to them, the conversation we had, I don't remember it exactly, but it went something like this. I was like, well, I'm in school right now to make something with my music, right? If I have the opportunity to do that right now, do I even need the school part?
So maybe it already worked.
Maybe it already worked.
Right.
Yeah. So it kind of eased it out a little bit.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So were you into like, this is all, so it's interesting on so many levels because like those years, it's so much different than the musical landscape now. Like it's almost like your only path or your only way out to that career you're talking about was like, it had to go through a label pretty much.
Yeah,
like none of these other options exist anymore. And like the way you used to shop deals to labels and, you know, so it's a totally different, I mean, so what you were offered was like what everyone's trying to get,
right.
You know? But then the harsh reality is that's only like one small, like you work so hard to get to that level and then it's like a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Were you into, because you refer to yourself as an empowerer, and like I know you're into podcasts and like mindset and all those things. Like when was that part of your life back then, or is that even kind of before that stuff's really widespread?
That's a great question. I think I think it was always a part of my my internal spirit, you know, my internal mindset. I just don't know that I had the vocabulary or even the knowledge, you know, to even know that this was a real thing.
Right.
You know, I mean, even just applying for a scholarship for high school and kind of even saying to my parents, who I had a great relationship with, it's not like I was trying to get out of the house or anything.
Right.
I just knew from a very young age that there was more, there was so much out there,
right.
You know, and it was up to me to kind of get it.
Right.
You know, so I think I've always had that. And, you know, looking back on it, I've never been asked that question before, but looking back on it, I think I would try to the best of my ability, educate as many people as I could, you know, and try to even be an inspiration through my own example. Hey, you know, you just growing up in the inner city, you just.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Just meet so many people who are just so unsatisfied.
Right.
You know, and maybe even just kind of stuck. And I think that just has to do with kind of like this block that's put up. And, you know, I would speak to even my own friends and I'm just, you know, you can do anything. Yeah.
Right.
I just remember having these conversations as a kid, like, you can do anything.
Right.
And so maybe it was always in there. And I just, you know, and I love those empowering speakers like Tony Robbins, and he was like my first, I think, experience. I'd stumbled onto one of his books,
right,
and read it, and that, you know, I'm like, now that's the vocabulary, like, and then it all clicked, you know. Yeah. Then I actually had this way to kind of understand what my own motivation and drive was really all about.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard Pitbull's story, talking about how, like, his mom used to drive around playing Tony Robbins all the time.
Sure. Yeah.
And then, like, one day Tony Robbins is at his, like, Hollywood Walk of Fame. It's like massively
intense.
That's just
insane. That is so intense, man.
It's really
cool.
That
is so intense.
All right. So I don't want to kind of gloss over the next period of your life, but, like, just to sort of summarize, is like, you went from, like, massive musical opportunity to maybe reality a little bit, and fell on the safety net of, like, maybe I should be getting a job and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you went through a phase where, like, you were like pursuing the sort of, you know, regular job or career. Mm-hmm. And music was in the backdrop.
Yep.
What was that phase of life like, and how did music survive through that while you were doing that?
Arguably the hardest phase of my life, you know. It was like the puberty of my life, you know.
Right.
It was kind of like, oh, I'm so confused. What am I supposed to do? Because I had been, you know, obviously from that, you know, that time before, we had been aggressively trying to really make the dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if we even understood the dream. I think even that was conditioned. It was like, well, the dream is to be a one percenter. Again, it was like this abyss. No one knew what, it was just nebulous.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, well, I obviously need to start making some money. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I went and I got a job, and it was a pretty good job, you know, and was doing, you know, well for myself. And I'm like, all right, well, this feels okay. You know, like this feel, and I don't have to stop my music, and I can also fund my music because now I have a job. But as the years went on, it was just kind of this revolving door, you know, it's just wash, rinse, repeat cycle, just over and over. And I'm like, I really don't know, you know, I'm kind of stuck in this loop, and it was very uninspiring. And I realized that my music, as the years went on, even though we had continued to see some successes, you know, over that time, it just wasn't positioned in a way where I can, you know, really, really go for what I wanted to go for and really get my message across. And so just one day I was stuck in traffic, 7 o'clock in the morning on the Garden State Parkway. And I was like, F this, man. This is my last day. This is just my last. I don't care if I'm homeless after this. Like, I just can't do this anymore. And much to my delight, I walked in and I said to my boss, who was amazing, we sat down. I said, listen, I just, you know, and she was like, happy for you. I was like, whoa, you know, and right. that was a shock as well, just to receive that support, you know.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff like people, you know, dream about, talk about, like, yeah, think about, but don't actually do.
Right.
And you've done it like twice in two big ways, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's a bold move to walk in and say, you know what, this isn't for me, and going to dedicate myself to my music. And that's the other thing is, like, I think people lose sight of, like, you said it very well, is like people think of that top 1%, but yeah, really, like, if music's your passion and that's what you love to do, like, there's no greater, like, achievement than to be able to do what you love to do for a living. Absolutely. So if you can make a living at music, that's amazing.
It's amazing.
So it's like, I think it's perspective. Like, I think people get burnt out on the idea of, like, oh, I'm not at that 1%, so I'm not happy. But it's absolutely, like, dude, you're, like, doing what you love.
For,
you know,
sure.
With, you know, what you dreamed about doing, you're, yeah, doing. So, yeah, that's cool.
I think it's one of those few industries where, you know, we just feel, if I'm not at the top, mm-hmm, it's not worth doing.
Right.
And I just find that to be such, it's so silly to me now to think about, even though I had lived that right, model for so long. You know, there are, you know, there are classes, I guess. You know, there's obviously the 1%, they're the elite.
Right.
And then, you know, there's gradients along the way. And I think, much like any other career,
right,
you know, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to make millions of dollars every year to consider yourself successful in any other career. So why this one?
Right.
You,
yeah,
know?
No, it's true.
Yeah.
So miraculously, you were able to survive as a musician when you, yeah, dedicate yourself full time to, yeah, like, how have you grown from that and what's come of it since you made that choice?
I think it really taught me, not only, you know, what I'm made of as a musician, mm-hmm, and an entertainer, but it allowed me to really kind of hone the way I can connect with people. And over that period of time, I kind of realized that, you know, I think art is meant to inspire. At the very minimum, it's just meant to inspire feeling, mm-hmm, of some sort, you, right, know. To me, allowing yourself to be vulnerable, allowing yourself to take in feelings and process them and understand what they mean, I think that's true power. You know, so that's kind of really my that's the nucleus of everything that I've set out to do. And I think diving in head first and literally having, like, there was no safety net, you know, there was nothing.
Right.
And I think I was doing, like, one show a week and, like, teaching some lessons on the side to, like, make money and things, sure, like that. Right in Red Bank. Little by little, I started to realize. I talked to another musician friend of mine who was a full-time musician at the time, and they gave me a great piece of just practical advice. And they said, just all you need to do is get one steady thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you realize the pacing and the pattern. And because I think musicians are just, we're kind of like scavengers, you know, like we're kind of digging, panning for gold constantly.
Right.
Like, maybe here, maybe here, maybe here. Right. And I think, like, once you find that one area where you can thrive a little bit,
mm-hmm,
I think it immediately just connect with the knowledge and how to continue doing it in other areas.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
It's like domino effect.
For sure.
Just
for sure.
Hammer couple little things.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about your new show. I mean, this sounds like really diverse from anything you've done. So the Impressionable with Rich Genovalaveo. No set lists.
Nope.
No shows. It's a one-man show.
One-man show.
That's like bold move out there. You're all alone, man. I don't want to scare you before Friday.
I'm already scared enough.
But it says you're doing musical impressions of icons like Nat and Natalie King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Rod Stewart, Andrea Bocelli, Garth Brooks, Johnny Cash, Kermit the Frog, even modern-day megastars, Green Day, Axl Rose, Jay-Z, DMX, Bruno Mars, Pitbull, and more.
Yeah.
Show is for everyone.
It's for everyone.
Where'd the idea come from?
So, as I mentioned, you know, looking back on it, I think I've always tried to inspire people, mm-hmm, to be elevated and to kind of feel feelings and through art. The whole impressions thing for me started when I was very young. I'd always been kind of a mimic, You know, I always had like a little bit of an ear and a knack for that, even from what they tell me. I don't really remember it, but from when I was like maybe even two,
right,
they would stand me like in the middle of my grandmother's table, and I would like quote movies and quote scenes, you know, and everyone would be like, this kid's crazy.
Right.
But in the seventh grade, I was in elementary school in Newark. And, you know, you had a handful of rough kids, you know, kids that just kind of didn't like, you know, being told what to do.
Right.
And I'd always been, even though school was very serious for me and I'd always excelled in school, I was also a little bit of a clown in school. I was kind of the class clown.
Right.
The teachers never really gave me a hard time about it because I was always respectful, you know, and I didn't disrupt, but I loved just being a goof. I right. loved it so much because, again, you know, there's that, the connection, you know.
Right.
And
see, my daughter taught me recently that that's the key. It's the timing of it.
100%.
So when I was a kid, I didn't understand that. I was a class clown too, but I was like, I picked the wrong time. You got to pick your spots.
You got to pick your spots.
So yeah,
you gotta
I just
spots.
Learned that recently. That's
right.
That was my mistake.
That's
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's so funny. But yeah, so in the seventh grade, one of my teachers came walking into our homeroom, and she I had no idea this was happening. She just said, can I borrow him for a second? And I'm like, oh my God. Like,
right.
What did I do anything today? Like, did I in trouble? And she pulls me aside and we're in the hallway walking toward her classroom. And she goes, I need you to control my class. They're crazy today.
Right.
And I'm like, what do you want me to do? I'm 12, you know, like, I don't know. And she goes, just make them laugh. Just do something, sing for them, do something. I'm like, all right. So like, I just walked in the front of the class and I stood there and they're looking at me like, that was Rich doing in our class right now.
Right.
And I was like, give me someone like name a teacher. And I would do an impression of that teacher
way.
And just like capture some of their nuances, like just on the fly. Like I didn't even realize, I didn't know if it was good or bad.
Right.
I just wanted to do something. And then it started to kind of catch on. And as they're laughing, I'm realizing that I'm like kind of able to do it a little better.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, I get it. Just look for the real small nuances here.
Right.
And then, you know, eventually they would have me impersonate like other students, and where you would think you might offend them, they were actually laughing. And then it worked. The teacher calmed me down. And then other teachers started to like pull me out of class and use me for crowd control.
Right.
And so I'd always been doing, you know, impressions and stuff. And then fast forward many, many years, there was a show in Vegas, Danny Gans.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away pretty young, but he was like the number one show in Vegas.
Right.
And I'd been living out there for a little bit.
I remember his face was on billboards everywhere.
Right.
I was like, who the hell is Danny Gans?
Right.
Man? Yeah,
and that's what I said. I'm
right.
like, because he was everywhere. And I'm like, I'm going to look this guy up. And it was like the internet was still fairly weak, you know? So
right.
I was like, I couldn't get too much
right.
out of him, but I obviously figured out who he was. And eventually I wound up, someone had bought me tickets to see the show while, you know, while I was out there. And, I have to say, man, it just, I had said this before, but have you ever seen a show that was so amazing that you're just overwhelmed with emotion and you almost want to cry because it's so good?
Right.
That's how I felt when I saw him. And apart from that, I was like, this guy is literally doing the thing that I always wanted to do. He's making people like laugh with music, and he's impersonating people, and it was just so cool. And I was like, I need to do a show like this. And this was probably 15 years ago, you know?
So when did you kind of lay the groundwork that, okay, I'm going to do this?
Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had always written for the show,
uh-huh.
you know, years and years worth of notes and things like that.
Right.
And it wasn't until last year that I said, you know what? I like to consider myself, you know, a doer, you know, make the tough decision. Like that's what it's all about. You
right.
know? We have to risk. You have to take some risk. And I just said to myself, I think it took me that long to realize really what the motivation of the show was. That
right.
what it wasn't, I think in the past, maybe it was a little more self-serving. Like, oh, this will be, people will like this, you know,
right.
and which is good for me. You know, I'll like it. It'll make me happy if other people enjoy the show. But I think over time, leading up to last year, I was like, it's deeper than that. You know, it's kind of taking all these elements of my life, you know, all these little weird things that just kind of started and then like just kind of like faded and they're still there, but they have this frayed end. And, you know, finally tying them all together in a way where I think and hope that I can kind of use all these things to just inspire people to live a full life.
That's really cool. I mean, and it's nuts, man, when it goes back, you're tying it back to when you were 12 and for some reason a teacher called you in and...
That's to this really day, really to this day, I'm not even sure, you know, why they picked me to do this, right? But, you know.
So, I mean, obviously you had a gift for this, which is cool. So is it logistically tough to pitch like a new idea, a new show like this? And how do you get like Investors Bank Theater on board? And
It was really fortuitous. I believe in, you know, like I said, I mean, obviously if I'm listening to Tony Robbins and people like this, but I've always believed in synchronicity. Yeah. I don't really believe in coincidence too much. Long story short, I had been invited to do a house party for someone up north. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe about 70 people at the party. And it was nice. And it was just a show that I had put on. And just kind of piano bar type of thing, taking requests and just interacting with the crowd, making them laugh, da 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 da. And then at the end of the show, turns out the woman is involved with the theater. She's I don't know if she's the chairperson of the community who runs it, but she had mentioned the theater to me at her house, and she was like, "I feel like this might be, you might be really great at the theater." And I was like, "Whoa, that, you know, that'd be amazing,
right?
Yeah, that'd be great." And we were kind of like, "But do you have anything for the theater?" You know, and I'm like, you know, sort of, yeah, you know. And then this was maybe 2 years ago, and then last year when I had just said, you know what, I'm just gonna do this thing, and I had gone out and workshopped,
right,
separate bits in like smaller chunks at like comedy clubs and things like this. And I said, I really think I can do this whole show.
Wow.
And then really, to be honest with you, kind of before the show was even ready, I just called her and said, I got a show for you. You think we can put this up?
Right.
And explained it to her. And, you know, she was excited about it and she still is. And, you know, so it's kind of how that kind of went in.
That's cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
That was my biggest fear with the whole thing too, because I had never really put, I have, you know, done literally thousands of performances in various, to various degrees, but I've never really done like a solo thing that's all mine,
right,
in a theater, you know. So it is still overwhelming, but
sure.
Yeah, you know, it's very exciting.
It's less pressure when it's a band or, you know, a group or something.
Yeah. It's so true.
That's really cool. So that's awesome. Once again, Friday, October 26th, Investors Bank Theater, Sukasana, New Jersey, 8 p.m. Tickets online on your site.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. richaveo.com. Check that out. So it's a wide variety of stuff, like, and I know you kind of want to keep it under wraps a little bit, but what should people expect when they see this show?
I think, I think people should expect to just kind of ride a little bit of a roller coaster with me. Obviously, I want to make people laugh, but I also want people to be a little vulnerable. You know, it is a variety show, so it's not just strictly a comedy show.
Right.
I kind of want to give people just 100% of me, and that includes, you know, some of the serious stuff that I, you know, am involved with musically.
Right.
I am also an original artist. I'll always be an original artist at heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to incorporate some of that into the show.
That's cool.
You know, utilize that form of entertainment as well. There's going to be like a little game show portion. There's going to be comedy and stories and a little improv and obviously impressions.
Right.
Just a little of everything, I think.
That's killer. Yeah. And are you playing any instruments during it? Like, is there a piano involved?
It's going to be all live. Yeah. It's just going to be all live. I have my keyboards up there.
Right.
And, you know, so I'll be able to create some interesting and fun soundscapes with that. But it's going to be 100% live.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Definitely encourage people to check that out. Are there plans after this show to go other places?
Yeah. I don't have anything solid.
Right.
But this will be filmed.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to kind of utilize this show.
Shop it around.
To shop it around and see if we can continue a theater run with it.
That'd be killer.
Yeah.
I mean, sounds like it'd be a home run for like AC also.
I would love that. That'd be great. Cool. Yeah.
Very cool. In a weird way, you've also incorporated some of, you know, Grandma's love of Liberace with this, right?
Definitely. Most definitely. It's all about coming full circle with this show.
That's really cool.
She would be happy. I just have to throw some rings on.
Yeah, totally. That's pretty awesome. All right. I appreciate you coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It was really cool to talk to you. The only other thing I'm going to take away from this that maybe we could do it together somehow, but like I never thought about that at all, about like the kids playing classical music. Like, I'd love to go see a recital somewhere of like a kid wearing like an Iron Maiden t-shirt and just rocking out on piano to Beethoven like the way it's supposed to be, or
that'd
something
be
or whatever, you know,
that'd like be amazing.
Like show their personality, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like stop forcing people to be boring and
right.
Musician servants walking in the back door.
Yeah,
right?
It's not 1700. Right. Like the kid can let the kid grow his hair out and it's cool, man. Put on a show. It's all good.
Totally. That's awesome. All right, Rich, thanks for coming in.
Evan, thanks for having me.
You got it, man. Once again, check out Rich online, impressionableshow.com, and also richaveo.com. It's Aveo, A-V-E-O. And follow Rich on Instagram at richaveo. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You got it.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.